Voices that inspire the extended interview.
I am Robin Hassler Thompson, and I'm the executive director of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, or STAC.
So what is STAC?
STAC is a local anti-trafficking nonprofit, and we have two main goals of our work. One is to provide care and services to people who are sex or labor trafficked of all kinds, adults, children, men, women, U.S. citizens, not U.S. citizens, et cetera. And we also do tons of community education.
So for many people, this might come as a surprise that this is something here in Tallahassee. Like you, what prompted you to start this work?
Well, what prompted me to start the anti-trafficking work here in Tallahassee is exactly the fact that it is here in our state, in our community, in all communities, really. And it was incumbent upon us as people working in the field, and when I say people, I mean the FSU Center for the Advancement of Human Rights that was developing a state strategic plan to kind of look here locally and say, hey, we can't just be saying what everybody else in the state should be doing on human trafficking. We need to do something here. And our local coalition also raised the flag and said, something needs to be happening here locally. So that's when I worked with others in the community to pull it together, to develop and to create STAC.
And how long now?
We will be 10 years old in 2025 in February.
Wow. So that's amazing that you've been able to, I guess it's good and it's bad, right? Like it's a service that is really still needed.
It is a service. It is a need that's still out there. And yes, everyone that I know in the anti-human trafficking movement wants to be put out of business. But it is still here. And what we're seeing is greater and greater recognition that it's here and more people realizing it's something that they should know about and know what to do.
So how does the average citizen pay attention to this? How do they be proactive if they suspect something or have their eyes be aware to look for something?
Well, it's tricky with human trafficking to see it even though it might be right in front of you because people can be trafficked in any kind of labor or work. We often hear about sex trafficking and that might be more out there in terms of recognizable because that could mean prostitution, forced prostitution, or any kind of forced kind of sex act or sex activity. But I think what's the best thing that the regular person could do is to understand exactly what human trafficking looks like if it is in a place of work or in a school or in a restaurant or on a construction site, and then know how to alert the people who need to know about it, whether that's law enforcement or others.
Mm-hmm. So you've been doing this for 10 years and probably aware of this before starting STAC. What has led you to this work?
What led me to this work is really a sort of old Zen saying that I heard a long time ago, and that is that you should polish your path, whatever path you get on. And to me, it's never been a straight path. It's always had its curves and ups and downs. But it was through my work on violence against women issues that I became more aware of the issue of human trafficking. And that all happened for me at a rescue shelter in Dhaka in Bangladesh when I was there working on a domestic violence-related project. And I learned about trafficking and just said, I need to do something when I get back home. And it was right after that, and this is over 22 years ago now, I think, that I got the call to help with it from the Human Rights Center here.
So what's your background? Like, how does one get trained? What training and awareness skills did you have to acquire to be feeling like you could navigate this world?
I don't know that I have any particular skills to be able to navigate this or any other work that I've done, except it just feels like being of service is really important. And that's something I got from my mother. And just being aware as a human being about the needs or the realities that are around. And is there anything I can do to help? I mean, that's one of the reasons I went to law school, is that I saw the practice of law and being a lawyer as kind of a public service at its heart, because the rule of law is so important. And because injustice, you know, anywhere is injustice everywhere, sort of. I know that sounds kind of corny. It really sounds corny. But I just felt like, what part can I do to make a difference, you know? And so, it doesn't to me feel altruistic or anything. I love this work. I for most all of my career, I would always think, I'm getting paid to do this? This is amazing. And that, you know, that was from you know, my work in the legislature, when I worked with and for Governor Lawton Chiles. It was a tremendous opportunity. And so, gosh, what a journey, right?
And it is always interesting when we look back, and, you know, I love polishing the path, knowing that this was something you were passionate about, and then just sort of going deeper in it so that you could make that difference you ultimately want to make.
Or I don't know if it's about sometimes even being conscious of what it's really interesting to look back and think what dots were connected, what doors opened, and when a door closed, how that really opened a window. I think that's the other part about, sort of to mix metaphors totally, polishing your path, because you never know. And one of my most favorite sayings in Shakespeare is, there's more than heaven and earth than is dreamt of in your philosophy, Horatio, right? So I always think about that to think, okay, I don't understand what's going on here, but that's okay, because there's more in heaven and earth than is dreamt of. And if it feels right, you can go forward and learn.
Where did you grow up, Robin?
I grew up in Fort Lauderdale. I grew up here in Florida, and I went to school through high school in Fort Lauderdale, St. Thomas Aquinas High School, and then went to American University undergrad in Washington, D.C. In fact, I was thinking about this the other day, because I love politics too, and my first foray into politics was to work on Jimmy Carter's campaign in 1976. I was a senior in high school, and it was a horse race kind of primary. I remember that season, and he won. And so who knew? And I got an invitation to the inauguration. So as a senior in high school, I went to D.C. That's when I fell in love with Washington, and then learned about American U and got a small scholarship, and between that and, you know, work study and things, was able to attend school there. And it was amazing. You know, Washington is pretty fantastic as a city to go to when you're a student.
I've known you a long time, but learning all these bits and pieces of your history are just amazing. So high school, you had the wherewithal to say, I want to get involved. Where did that come from, that spirit of wanting to make a difference, to put your own skin in the game? Where did that come from?
Where that initial drive at high school, where did it come from? It's hard to say. I look back to my mom, who is always politically aware, up on current events, reading the paper every day, talking about what's going on in our world, and being involved in, she always worked. And I was bored in my high school at that time, I think. And I said, I want to do something. And she connected me with somebody who is head of the local Democratic Party. And he said, well, I know this person who's supporting Jimmy Carter. Do you think she'd want to help? And I said, sure. So it was that same kind of, well, let's just see, you know? And so I look back at that moment and think, wow, that was great. And it really did spring out of, I need to do something. I was just bored. I was a bored high school student.
So we're flash forward to 2024, and we're in election season again.
Yes.
So what as a person who's been involved in so many aspects of government and policy, and what are you hopeful for right now?
I have always stayed hopeful. Even in times when it looks really bleak or you can get down about what's happening, I think the human spirit is tremendous and we can accomplish great things when we do it together. And I think the potential is out there. And I think we're also in one of the most fascinating times of history. I think that there's a giant shift happening all kinds of different ways in terms of people having voices. So what I've seen a lot, too, is in the last, I'd say, couple decades, hearing the voices of people who've been victimized in the fields that I worked in, like around violence against women, go from not having voices, not being heard, whether it's in the justice system or in popular media, to seeing the voices of survivors being out there all the time. When you see, in the Larry Nassar case, that judge let every single young woman that he victimized say her piece at the trial. That, to me, is so emblematic of how the voices of people who've been unheard have now been able to be heard. You know, technology, everything is making all that possible. And that is empowering, and that's to the benefit of all of us. And that, to me, signals this huge shift in old giving way to new of kind of the empowerment of people who haven't had power, gaining that power and voice. So I'm excited to see change. And I think that we are in a time of great change. So I'm extremely hopeful.
That's great. Well, I want to just talk a little bit about your mother, because I know how inspirational she's been to you, and she's still with you. I just think what an amazing woman she is. And your love for her is just, it's becoming clearer to me now, you know, because I know we had trouble scheduling time.
Yes.
Because
yes,
you're spending so much time caring for your mom.
For me, my mother has been a sort of, an inspiration, a rock, just pure love. And wow, what a gift that is. And so it's really when I have these moments when somebody asks me these questions about my life and I look back and I think of her and I think, yep, there she was. There she was, always being not just supportive but an inspiration, and being a teacher when she didn't even realize she was teaching, but just because of who she is, because she's so smart and so funny and so much a lover of life and music and culture and comedy. I was laughing the other day. She had George Carlin's first album when it came out. I don't know that I should have been listening to that when I was a kid, but I still remember it, and I can just laugh because she's always been up on popular culture. And I think it's that sort of positive attitude of life being full and being just there, that it's not like one of those lessons that a parent teaches. They just teach by being who they are. And, you know, the love was always a constant. And so how lucky, how fortunate I am you know? So that's, this journey is just very intense with her now, but it's good. It is good, and I am learning still so much from her.
Thank you for sharing that. Our mothers are so important to us.
Yeah.
You know, they really are, and they stay. My mother's been gone for a while, but she's not mm-hmm. gone in my heart.
There you go. There you go. It's just your relationship changes. I was just listening to that great podcast that Julia Louis-Dreyfus has.
Yeah.
And she's talking about, I think Sally Field was, I don't know which one it was, but she basically says, yeah, your relationship changes with the person and doesn't die.
Yeah.
So that's lovely to hear.
Yeah.
I know your mom was great and is great.
Yep. Yep. My sister-in-law and I were texting last night through the DNC, and after Michelle spoke, my sister-in-law texted me and said, all I could think about was your mom through that whole speech.
There you go.
So.
And you know what? One of my earliest memories with my mother was literally watching the convention. I must have been 4 or 5 years old. She was ironing. You know, they used to set their ironing boards up in front of the TV and just have all the basket of, you know. She was ironing. I was watching And it was, I remember the whole thing with the states and all that, you know. And so yeah, I still have the bug.
Yep. Well, this has been wonderful
Thank
to talk
you.
With you, Robin. And, you know, just to wrap it up, I think that one of the things you said about your mom that I think is what allows you to do work that's hard is that you probably from her learned that digging into our culture is what brings us joy. And so even when there's bad parts of it, it doesn't paint your whole view of life, that there's other parts of life that are also wonderful.
Absolutely. You know, the message is that, yes, we stub our toes or we skin our knees, but gosh, there's so much beauty and so much creativity and so many possibilities for all of us that sometimes we just have to get out of our own way to see them, but they're out there.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm Robin Hassler Thompson, and I'm the executive director of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, or STAC, and thank you.